This is the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau. Glad to have you along with us on the Ideas Network. We're talking about how to get your dog ready for cold and snow. And back with us is George Malara. He's a professional dog trainer and owner of Divine Canine in Madison. Does your dog have a problem with wearing a sweater or booties? Are you wondering how to keep him entertained inside when it's too cold to go outside? What other behavioral questions do you have? Give us a call. All of our lines are open, so if you call now, you'll get in right away. 800-642-1234. Or if you'd prefer, you can send an email, and that's ideas@wpr.org. George Malara, it's so good to see you in person.
So good to see you in person.
George is actually here in the studio for the first time, so we're very, very happy about that.
So happy to be here.
And we were talking about how the whole pandemic really changed your business too, but things are looking up for you.
I get to see people in person and touch their dogs.
Oh, well, that's so important with dogs, isn't it?
Absolutely. There's a connection that you, when you're there, it's you want to be able to interact and see the pup and see little nuances of behavior that we don't see virtually over Zoom.
Yes. Well, and you know, dogs are nervous over Zoom. So,
they
they're on their best behavior, right? So, winter's coming, and that means we're going to have snow, we're going to have ice, and there's going to be salt on the sidewalks. So, what can we do to protect our dog's paws? They're so vulnerable, aren't they?
There's a lot to be done for dogs, especially take a look at your neighborhood. See what type of salt is being scattered about. Sometimes when the salt is really built up, it can get between their paws and really cause burns and stuff. So a couple little things. Number one, booties are wonderful, but they do require a little bit of training to teach the dogs how to wear them. There are pet stores that will allow you to come in and try booties on because there's a variety of different types of booties that you can put on your dog to protect their feet. For dogs that if you have a nicer property or your yard, you don't have to worry about salt, but you do have to worry about the buildup of ice and snow on their paws. Some of the furrier pups can develop these snowballs around their ankles and wrists.
In between their little pads.
Exactly.
My collie had that all the time.
Poor guy. Then they spend time biting it and trying to get it out. So there is there's a little bit of desensitization training, like wearing a harness or wearing a haltie or gentle leader. That has to happen when you're training your pup to wear their booty. So you can put a booty on, give them a bunch of treats and take the booty off and then put the booty back on, give them some treats and slowly put the booties on all four paws and see how they do. The other thing that I recommend is they make different types of salves that you can put on your dog's feet. And the petroleum or the base of the salve can act as an insulator on the snow to prevent those pesky little snowballs from building up. Those are really great products to start training with now for the booties. Don't try to put the booties on the day of the first foot of snow.
Right.
Practice now.
And now with the salves, is that going to stain my carpet when they come back in?
Most salves are safe. A lot of companies thought about that before putting it on the market. One other thing that I recommend is putting the salve on before you go out for the walk. But then when you get home, having a little Tupperware with a little bit of warm water that you can sort of dunk their little feet in and just rinse their little feet off from anything else that might be out there. Mm-hmm. And then that'll remove any salve that was left on their feet.
And there are special salts, I guess, quote unquote, that you can put out, right, that don't hurt their paws?
Correct. There's a lot of dog-safe marketed salts that you can put on your property that'll prevent them from getting any sort of burns or injuries on their feet.
Mm-hmm.
Something else I recommend bringing is a little bottle of water on your walk. And if your pup starts to lift their paw or lick their paw because of discomfort, you can squirt some water on their foot and, you know, just pat it dry and then continue on your walk.
Yeah, patting it dry so they're not having little
right.
ice feet. And then let's talk about them being warm. There's a lot of dogs that obviously need a sweater. There's a lot of dogs that obviously don't need a sweater. So for those in between, how do you decide?
You know, it's sort of like when you're picking a coat out of your closet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, on a day like today, I grabbed my light rain jacket. It's a little rainy out. On a colder day, I'll grab something a little bit warmer. So it's okay to have a bit of a wardrobe for your dog. And it doesn't necessarily have to be a lavish wardrobe. It has to be a practical wardrobe that's going to suit the temperature outside.
Mm-hmm. So I just got a dog, Seamus the Destroyer, as one of my friends called him. We can go into that some other time. But he's a black mouth cur. Uh-huh. So he's got kind of a medium. What's the temperature that I know he's going to need a little protection? I mean, how do I figure that out?
I would definitely read Seamus. So when you take him outside, see how he behaves in different types of weather.
Okay.
So as the weather starts getting colder, blustier, and just a little bit when that chill hits your bones.
Yeah.
Pay attention to how he acts. Does he sort of start to shiver? Does he start to sort of stand still? That might be a moment you can give him an insulating layer of a jacket or something just to help keep him warm and see if that helps him. And you be a student of his behavior. If he's sort of bouncing around without a care in the world, he's fine.
Okay.
If he starts to be still and shiver, then you might want to introduce a jacket of some sort.
And do we need to like cover the chest area and the back? Is that the important parts to cover?
Generally, the measurements I like for a jacket, I do like something with a collar that comes up over their actual collar.
Okay.
And then you would measure from the base of the neck to the base of the tail. And what I like to do to measure for a jacket is getting a piece of string. And then you just put it on your dog, and then you measure the string to see what size they would be. Mm-hmm. And since dogs come in all sorts of shapes and sizes,
yeah.
It's important to figure out, like, some dogs have a bigger barrel chest, some dogs are short and stout, and then the jacket ends up hanging over their tush. So we want to make sure the jackets are all fitting properly.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. Is that another thing you could go to a pet store, and you could probably try it on?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Most pet stores will allow you to bring your pup into the store, so long as they're polite and well-behaved. I know Bad Dog Frida locally will allow dogs to come in and try on equipment and jackets to make sure that you're getting the right size for your pup.
That's a great name, Bad Dog Frida.
Bad Dog Frida, it's so good.
I love it. I passed a truck today that was for another company. It's called Sit Means Sit. That's the name of the company. So I love these names. This is great. Okay, so we've got the sweater. We got the booties. You talked about how to get them to wear the booties. How do we get that sweater on if they have a problem with an aversion, something going over their head, they don't like it?
And everything I do is about desensitization. Work slow. Imagine yourself if you had an aversion to something. You would not want to be thrown into the deep end. You'd want to move slowly. So same thing goes for our dogs. What you can do is open up the neck of the jacket or collar, and a lot of jackets will drape over and zip somewhere so that there's not this looming over the head. And from there, what you do is you put the sweater over the neck and don't even bother putting it on the rest of the way. Just feed them treats.
Oh.
And then you take it off. And then the dog's going to say, no, put it back on. Put it back on. And little by little, you start to associate putting on the cold weather gear with treats, and then they get comfortable. Once you get the sweater jacket on entirely, I would just have your dog wear it in the house, feed them their dinner, take their mind off it a little bit. Most of the time, it fits nice and comfortable. The dog's going to be comfortable wearing it over their body.
Okay. Well, that sounds like fairly easy. You just have to be patient, right?
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we do have a call, not necessarily about winter, but Larry in Elkhorn has a little bit of a problem with his dog. Hi, Larry.
Hi, Larry.
Hi. Hi. We've got a rescue dog that we just picked up a year ago tomorrow. She came out of Texas, and she's a small terrier, an 8-pound terrier. She's really adjusted well to the family, except for any males. Now, I have 3 daughters and my wife. She's friendly to any, even if she just...
Oh, Larry, you just went out on us, but I think you probably have enough.
I have enough to get... I have the gist of that, Larry. Thank you for calling. Thank you for adopting, and happy Gotcha Day tomorrow. When we talk about fear of people, there's a technique that I love to use to help a dog warm up, and it has to do with the severity of the fear. A lot of times what people do is they'll give the dog treats, and then when the treats all disappear, the dog looks up and sees the scary stranger and then begins to bark. So what I like to do is give the dog a couple of treats, 3 or 4, and then you toss a treat away so the dog can track it and go get it. What this does is it creates a little bit of distance for the dog and a little bit of a pressure release. And then what does the dog have to do to get more food? Come back. Mm-hmm. So we're actually getting the behavior of approaching, and the dog's mindset switches from stranger danger to food acquisition. And you lather, rinse, repeat. And over time, dogs start getting better. One thing I will tell people not to do is stay away from works of fiction. A lot of times we think, oh my God, every dog on the planet was abused by a man with a beard and a hat. Not necessarily true. It could very well be lack of socialization to these objects or things or people that causes them to have this fear. So when we talk about a specific dog, is we want to make sure that we're reading the dog correctly and making sure that we're using food around these moments where the dog is displaying the fear. And remember that your dog is having a hard time. They're not giving you a hard time. And be patient, because they're scared. We want to take it nice and slow and make sure that we're not overwhelming them. I hope that helps, Larry. Good luck.
Thank you, Larry. Appreciate that call. And we did get, excuse me, we did get an email from Lanny, and they have a senior dog who doesn't like to go outside when it's cold outside. Is there anything they can do in the winter to give her opportunities for exercise? And that was part of what we want to talk about today. So let's take a little bit of a break, and then we're going to come right back. This is the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau. Claire Neipert is our on-air producer today, and Trina LaSousa is our technical director. And we're talking about dog behavior with our regular guest, George Malara. He's a professional dog trainer and owner of Divine Canine, which is another cool name, in Madison. And George, we were just talking about this email from Lanny about trying to get their senior dog, especially senior dogs. They've got it figured out. It's cold outside. Nuh-uh. So what do we do to get them out there?
So this is a topic that is interesting, because some dogs love the cold. Some dogs don't.
Yeah.
So to come inside for a dog that loves the cold is a punishment. For a dog that doesn't like the cold, coming inside is a reward. So a couple tips here that are really nice for winter months. Number one is putting down a tarp over the grass before it snows.
Oh, that's a great idea. Okay.
So you stake it down, you mark off where the tarp is, mm-hmm. and then when the snow comes, you can pull back the tarp and you have a nice little patch of dead grass for your dog to go on, and mm-hmm. this way they're more comfortable going. Now, when it comes to giving your dog ample exercise, first thing I do is pick up their food bowl, because eating out of a bowl is mindless.
Right.
What you can do is, if your dog is just on a straight kibble, you can take the kibble and scatter it on the floor. So okay. your dog has to go back and forth like a little truffle pig, and they're walking around and getting the exercise, because senior dogs do need good exercise. It's important for them. And this way they're walking around your house and they're looking for their little vittles, and they're finally getting it all. And then they're going to be pooped and tired, and they'll have walked around. They'll get the steps in.
That's great.
No, almost like mall walkers.
It's like a mall walker. I love it. I love it. Well, that's what we should do with our old malls, right? Just
that's
throw
right.
kibble out there, bring the dogs in, and you're good to go. Excellent. Well, good luck with that, Lanny. Hopefully that works for you. And as far as keeping them outside when it's cold, so Seamus is a Texas dog, okay? So he's not used to snow. So when it did snow a little bit when I got him, he's looking at me like, what is this? And he doesn't even like to look, you know, walk on brown leaves because of the noise. So trying to get him to do that. You said the grass. Is there something else to get him out the door without having to pull him out there?
It's got to be quite amazing for a dog to come from the South. We get a lot of our dogs from the South,
yeah.
Alabama, Tennessee, Kentucky, mm-hmm. and Texas. And when these dogs come up and they see snow for the first time, they must think the world is ending.
Right.
What is this? I'm used to 110 degrees.
Yeah.
So the idea is to, again, slowly introduce them to longer moments outside in the cold, as opposed to, we're going to go for a husky hike today, right? And the dog might not be used to it.
Okay.
So short jaunts outside. If they have a favorite toy, bring out some super yummy treats. You can do, you know, any type of play outside for short little stints outside, mm-hmm. just to get them sort of used to being outside. And the more they move, the more they'll warm up.
That makes sense. And then they kind of forget about it.
Correct.
Right? Okay, excellent. Do you have a dog question on his behavior or her behavior? Give us a call. We have open lines, 800-642-1234, or you can send an email to ideas@wpr.org. www.thedogfoundme.org. So you gave us some really good ideas about working with our animals inside to give them a little exercise. What else can we do when it is too cold for them to do much outside?
So if you have kids, one of my favorite things to do is crafting, right? I have a little 7-year-old daughter, Love. Hi, Love. And with my daughter, we will take an old t-shirt and we'll sprinkle some kibble on it and we'll roll it up and stick it in a cereal box.
Oh,
this way the dog can rip open the cereal box and shake out the t-shirt and be enriched on those days when it's just absolutely too bitter cold to go outside. And it keeps us entertained, keeps the dog entertained, and keeps them out of trouble, because the lack of exercise with younger dogs can cause them to get into mischievous acts. So we want to make sure that they're ripping up and doing appropriate things to the toys that we want them to.
Mm-hmm.
Another wonderful, any toy that you can purchase or have that you can stuff food into and freeze. It's a nice way for them to sort of lay down and eat out of this Kong or any type of toy that you can put food into, and it keeps them busy, and it keeps, you know, idle hands are the devil's tools.
So it's true if
they don't have something to work on, they'll find something to work on. So it's better if we give them what to work on.
Absolutely. Well, Seamus ate my Kong.
He's one of those.
Yes.
That's why we can't have nice things,
Seamus. That's why we can't have nice things. Oh, that dog. Anyway, people follow him along on my Facebook page and wonder what's going to happen next. Again, we're having no calls. This is odd. This is your chance. If you've had that question, 1-800-642-1234. We were talking a little bit earlier about people getting pets during the COVID pandemic when everything was locked down. And I think everybody was a little concerned. Okay, all these pets are going home. Shelters are empty. What's going to happen when people go back to work? So what are you seeing now?
Surprisingly, we have not seen as many returns as we thought we were going to see, which is great. That means people are putting into practice having some sort of doggy daycare or a dog walker to come into the home. And a lot of people are also sticking to working remotely. So that gives them the opportunity to be home, which is really wonderful. So in these moments, when we talk about COVID, there is some fallout to somebody being around all the time. One of them that I notice a lot is dogs being disruptive during calls and Zoom calls, very much like little kids. The moment we have a phone to our head, it's mommy, daddy, mommy, daddy. So when dogs need to have that sort of schedule where they get exercise, physical exercise, but also that level of enrichment, right? Giving them something to do while you're working. Mm-hmm. So having a stock of chewing bones of rawhide, pig's ears, you know, stuff that they can chew and work on, enrichment toys like the toys that you can stuff, ready to go, right? An ounce of prevention, right? Having the Kong stuffed and ready to go in the freezer so that you can just pull one out, give it to your dog, and it's like giving them a coloring book. It gives them something appropriate to work on as opposed to going off and chewing on your favorite plant or antique furniture.
Or a pool noodle. That was a fun one. Yes, a pool noodle. It was purple, though. It was very pretty. The calls are coming in now, so excellent. We'll get to you all in just a second. We do have Lenny in Lake Geneva, and he's got a question for you. Hi, Lenny.
Hey, how you doing?
Good morning, Lenny.
Good. I called because I felt a little sorry because nobody called.
Oh, well, thanks.
Well, thank you. I was beginning to wonder.
You shouldn't take it personally. Anyway,
okay, thanks.
You know, sometimes when a dog, you're sitting there and a dog puts their foot on top of your foot, I've read before, heard before, that's a dominant thing. So when dogs do that to me, I usually take it off my foot and I put my foot on top of their foot to send the message. Is that good or not good?
That's an old wives' tale. Dogs are not out to rule the planet.
They would have already, right?
Exactly. And I often tell people to sit there with their thumbs up and wiggle their thumbs and repeat after me, I have the opposable thumbs and the credit cards. I am in charge. The idea of a dog putting their clothes. So one of the things that I do for shelters is I do behavior evaluations to see whether or not a dog is safe to be adopted out and sent out to public. So when one of the first things I test for is to see how sociable the dog is. And that means the dog wants to be next to me, be near me. And when a dog leans on you and puts their foot on you, it's a level of connectivity. It's not dominance. And I'm so happy you asked that question because it is an old wives' tale and a lot of dogs are being misunderstood because of that. When they're actually reaching out for being social with their human, it's not them being dominant, it's them being sweet.
Yeah, we do mix that up a little bit, don't we, that we have to be the alpha male kind of a thing.
Right. Mm-hmm. And it's it couldn't be further from the truth.
Yeah.
The original scientist that came up with the dominance theory actually renounced his own work, Dr. Mensch, and he was studying adolescent wolves in captivity. So he saw these wolves being jerks to each other, and he saw them being, you know, just, you know, horrible to each other. And then he had the opportunity to study wolves in the wild, and he said, whoops. And by then the damage was done, and we have this idea of our our sweet domestic dogs trying to always have the upper hand.
Mm-hmm.
There's all those old wives' tales of walking through doorways first and, you know, eating before your dog, and, you know, all these things are just not true.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a really good point to bring up. So thank you, Lenny. We appreciate that phone call. Let's go on to Sandy in Fountain City. Hi, Sandy.
Hi. I have a 8-month-old mixed breed rescue dog that she's very sweet. I got her at about 4 months. She's about 30 pounds now, and she's not really going to get much bigger. And she's pretty reactive to meeting new dogs. You know, she barks and pulls on the leash, gets kind of crazy. But if she gets to know a dog, she just loves playing with them. But I don't know how to stop her from being so reactive when she first meets. It seems kind of a fear response to me, because sometimes she's off leash and another dog's friendly. I'll come up and she'll kind of run behind me and, you know, kind of bark in a high-pitched, you know, like she's scared.
Thank you for calling and thank you for adopting. You know, I love how observant you are of your dog, because one thing that I tell all of my clients and students is be a student of your dog's behavior. Your dog is always talking to you, but a lot of people aren't listening. So we have to make sure. So I love how observant you are of her. Now, when it comes to the reactivity, again, like I said earlier, your dog is having a hard time. They're not giving you a hard time. So when your dog becomes reactive, and this might seem counterintuitive, but we're going to talk about my two favorite people, Pavlov and B.F. Skinner. So counter conditioning and classical conditioning. So when we talk about this, you're out for a walk with your pup. What's her name?
Jessie.
So when you're out for a walk with Jessie, you're going to pack some super, super tasty treats. And every time Jessie sees the treat, and this is the golden ticket, wait for Jessie to see the dog. And then you praise her and give her treats, even if she becomes a little reactive. The only time I'd want you to create some distance is if she doesn't eat her food. If you're offering her chicken, cheese, turkey, roast beef, hot dogs, and she's not eating those things, it means that she's over threshold mentally and she's not able to think. And that's where you just want to create some distance. But if she's willing to eat, what you're going to start to see, and the first part of this is the Pavlov part, where we're saying every time there's a dog, you're going to get fed super yummy treats. From there, she's going to make an association between dogs and treats. So then she's going to see a dog, and then she's going to look up at you and say, hey, where's my treat? At that point, she's making a good association. And this would be equivalent to you working in an office, and let's say there's somebody in the office that you just really don't jive with and you don't like. And we talk about punishment here, where a lot of people want to jerk the leash and punish the dog and bark at the dog. Hey, quiet. No, don't bark. And the dog's going to say, well, I already feel uncomfortable, but boy, you don't like dogs at all.
Oh, that makes so much sense. Yeah.
So by using food, now let's say every time you saw this person in the office that you don't like, and you get the most violent heartburn ever, you're not going to feel much better about this person.
No.
But now imagine if every time you saw this person in the office, you get a $100 bill.
I like this person now.
Where's Bill?
Yes.
Where's Bill? I think we should go out for drinks. So what ends up happening is this really nice dynamic where your dog sees a dog, they start to associate it with food and look at you. And right there, your dog is going to start calming down. And then you start playing around with distance and duration. I do have a seminar that I could offer you. So if you want to stay on the line and get some info, you can reach out to me and I can supply you with a nice seminar.
Okay, we will try to get the phone number for Sandy. If Clara can grab that, I think they're working at it right now. So thank you, Sandy. We'll call you back, and we'll give you that number to George, and he can reach out to you, Sandy.
Wonderful. Thank you, Sandy.
Thank you. Next up is Rebecca in Green Bay, and oh, I feel this problem. Trimming nails in a dog. Oh, I'm not going to ask it. I'm sorry. Rebecca, go ahead.
Hi. Yes, I rescued, I guess I can't say I rescued, but I got a puppy from a rescue, and he was fine at first. He is now 2 years old, and we cannot get his nails trimmed. He has to be drugged.
Wow.
He never had a problem when he was a pup, and then all of a sudden, a year and a half ago, he can't stand it. We sit with him, we play with his paws, we hold him, and he's okay. As soon as that clippers comes out, he's beelines. The clipper sits around the house wherever he is, so he's used to it. But he can't stand the noise of that clipper.
Yeah.
And he just...
You're not alone in this problem. So many people struggle with this. And really what it comes down to is not have done enough handling in the beginning. Like you said, he was fine in the beginning. A lot of times people trim a little bit too far and you cut the blood vessel in the nail, and that can be very, very painful. It'd be like equivalent to like a hangnail ripping out of our nail. So one of the things that I recommend is to sort of do like a little reset. And then when you sit down with him, you're going to give him some treats. You're going to handle his feet, have the clippers there, and then you continue to, you know, feed him treats. One technique that I think works really well is to smear some peanut butter at nose level with your pup on your refrigerator, so they're licking and they're standing, and then you can lift up their feet and trim that way. But really, starting over with a desensitization process where you're touching and handling, and a lot of times people want to do all the nails at once. It's okay to just trim one nail and then throw a big old party with some hot dogs, and then a little while later, try another one. Another great time to practice doing nail trimmings is after he's had a lot of exercise. So he'll be nice and deeply tired, and he'll be a little bit more easygoing in the process of desensitizing to having his nails trimmed. A lot of rescue groups will pair with a groomer and do nail trims to raise money for their rescues. And letting a groomer do it, because they're professionals, they can do the nail trim very, very quickly. And without a lot of upheaval from the dog, and it can go a lot smoother utilizing the skilled hands of a groomer.
Thank you very much for that question, Rebecca. That's what I did. The groomer came in and 1, 2, 3. We were done. He still wasn't happy, but we were done, and it wasn't as bad as it could have been. Let's go back to the phones now. We've got Ruth in Eau Claire with a question. Hi, Ruth.
Yeah. Hi. We have a two and a half year old golden retriever who is just the most amazing dog and very smart. But one of the things he's been doing since he was young is just grabbing things and gulping them down. And so he's now just had his second emergency surgery for eating something he shouldn't have eaten. This time it was a corn cob. The first time it was twist ties. And so we're so careful and we watch him so carefully. But he'll just not, I mean, he's better because I started him in Rally. I thought, well, maybe he's just bored and he needs more mental stimulation. And so that has helped. I mean, really doing the Rally stuff challenges him and it's good. But there are times he'll just grab stuff and gulp it down, like the corn cob.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Ruth. I think we got the point there, huh, George?
So when you have a dog that has this tenacity of wanting to just eat anything and everything, because he's 2 and a half, he very well might be going through a growth spurt. Something similar happened with my dog, where she was about a year and a half, 2 years old, and she started guarding her food from our other dog. And I was sort of stuck in that rut of just like, this is how much food I feed you, and this is how much you get, and that was it. And I didn't realize that, like, just because I was on tracks and I was just doing my regular routine, she was having a growth spurt. And I increased her food intake, and I saw a lot of the resource guarding from my other dog go away, most all of it. So for your pup, I would recommend upping his food a little bit. He could be, because Golden Retrievers are a medium to large breed, it could very well be that he's hungry and that he's just not satiated. So a couple things you can do is to help him feel even more satiated is give him his kibble, because we don't want him to get overweight. And I love that you chose training and stimulating his mind, because that's also incredibly important. But you can up his food a little bit, and you can also add a little bit of canned pumpkin or some baked yams to his meal, to just to bulk up his food and help him feel more full overall.
Okay, great. Thank you very much for that. Good luck. That has got to be so frustrating. And next up, we have Catherine in Milwaukee with a comment. Hi, Catherine.
Hi. I have a service dog, and she always wears her vest when we're out. It's a real challenge to be outside with her because there are so many dog owners who walk their dogs on those extend leashes and kind of let the dog wander around while they're looking at their phone.
Mm-hmm.
Oftentimes they have their headphones on. And even if they do see it, even if they're not on one of those leashes and they're walking their dog and paying attention, even when they do see us, they yell that their dog is friendly, and they think it's okay for their dog to approach us, and they almost always get really angry when I explain that my dog is a service dog and she's working. I really struggle with how to deal in a polite way with folks who just insist that their dog is friendly.
Thank you, Catherine.
And Catherine, people don't realize how catastrophic it could be for the training that your dog has been through to provide the service that it needs to provide for you. And they don't realize that. They just think that they're doing something like, oh, my dog's being social, I'm going to allow it to approach. So I'm going to give you a little dirty tip. And this is, and you don't have to be mean, and you don't have to do anything, mean to the other people or the dog. So you can say one of two things, and I've been saying this for reactivity. So if I have a reactive dog, people allow their dogs to come up. There's not enough time to explain, like, oh, my dog's reactive, and my dog's friendly. Don't worry about it. It's fine. So here's the two phrases, and I've been saying this pre-COVID. My dog is contagious.
Oh, okay.
My dog has kennel cough.
Oh, that'll do it. That'll do it.
You want to see a human run? That's how you do it. They will definitely rein in their dogs. They don't have the aptitude to understand that you have a service dog. They're just trying to be friendly. But if there's illness involved, they'll hot foot it and collect their dogs and reel them in. I'm so sorry people aren't more respectful to your service dog. It's tough for people with service dogs because people don't realize how important service dogs are to their owners.
And I know we've, as humans, have been told it's a service dog, so, you know, don't come up to it, don't pet it like you. So that's the same thing for other dogs too, right? They have
Absolutely.
To respect that area around that dog is working. So good luck, Catherine. I think that's a really good idea. You're not hurting anybody,
right.
And it does get the message across. So
gets
thank
the job
you.
Done.
It does get the job done. Let's go up to Iron River, Michigan. Hi, Matt.
Hi. My question was, I work on the road. I have to travel a lot, and my dog comes with me almost all the time. But from time to time, I have to leave her with family, and she's familiar with them, and she likes them. But when I'm gone, maybe for 2 or 3 days at a time, she just will lay by the door, and she won't eat, and she won't drink water, and she just sits there waiting. And I was wondering if there's some way that I could alleviate her anxiety, maybe, if that's what it is.
That's very, very sweet. I love that you take your dog, you're able to take your dog with you to work and spend that kind of quality time with her. That's lovely. But on the flip side, leaving her home alone with family, even though you know she's safe, she just has that kind of attachment and bond with you, which I think is beautiful but sad at the same time, because we don't want her to be nervous or scared or worried about you. So when we, so what I would have your family do is spoil her.
Oh, you know, there you go.
give her the extra treats. Oh, when dad's out of town, you know, my whoever she's staying with, I get extra little scraps from the plate. I get hot dogs. I get these yummy Kong stuff with yummy things. And have your family do fun things with her. Lift her spirits by playing some tug of war. Tossing some treats in the yard and letting her sniff about. Food is the way to the dog's heart. And you can really create a lighter place when you use some yummy treats around those situations. Now, if she's like not eating for a few days at a time, that's a little bit worrisome. So giving her something like an anti-anxiety medicine, maybe you speak with your veterinarian, or even something as simple as like a CBD chew that can sort of alleviate some of her anxiety, just to get her to the place where she's comfortable eating and just lightening the load of her heart of you being away from her.
Would it make sense for him to kind of like leave but come back in 4 hours, and then they feed her while he's gone, and then when he comes back,
absolutely.
No food?
Okay. I call that technique the Jedi mind trick. So I do this with dogs that have that separation anxiety, where you give her something super, super yummy, you leave for a little bit, and you come back and you take it away. Right. So your returning is like a punishment. Even though it's really not.
But yeah.
And then you give it back to her, you leave again, you come back, take it away. And then she's like, would you just leave? And it can start changing her mind about that. But practicing in that when you're not having to travel could be beneficial as well. It might not be convenient if your family lives a little bit away from you, but even practicing, you know, once in a while might be helpful.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for that call, Matt, and good luck. We are talking about dog behavior today with George Malara. He is a professional dog trainer and the owner of Divine Canine in Madison. We do have an open line, 800-642-1234, or you can send an email. That address is ideas@wpr.org. And this is the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau. Coming up tomorrow, we're going to talk about the first annual, which I don't know if there's a first annual, but it's going to be. It's the first Great Midwest Crane Fest. And we'll take a look at the world of walleye, also with a fisheries biologist. So make sure you join us tomorrow starting at 11 right here on the Ideas Network. And right now we are talking about canine behavior. And we've got a few questions about winter coming up. We had Agnes email us a question, George. Their dog barks at her neighbors constantly when they are shoveling snow next door all winter long. Okay, what can they do to correct this?
So when we have a dog protecting the house, it's something that is a little bit innate. It's something that they do, right? This is my home. I have to protect it, right? Kevin McAllister from Home Alone.
Sure.
So when we have a noise like the neighbors, I would do the same thing that we discussed earlier about reactivity towards other dogs, where the moment the dog runs up on the couch, and this is, you know, I don't practice feng shui, but this is how most people have the layout. Couch is up against the big bay window. Dog can perch up there and survey their kingdom. And the dog will bark at anybody passing. So there's two parts to this. The first part is desensitizing to your neighbor shoveling snow. So I would perch up there with the dog and feed the dog treats while they're shoveling.
Oh,
so in the beginning, it would be a steady stream of treats. And then I would start slowing down where she looks at the people shoveling snow. She looks back at me, feed, feed, feed. Look back at the people shoveling snow, building duration of calm. And that food is happening during these moments. The second version is a cue that I have. Now, this one I teach sort of on the fly. Dog starts to bark at a squirrel outside or a person or whatever, and I'll say, thank you. Normally, what we want to say is, shut up, be quiet, right? But that sounds gruff, and it sounds like we're barking too.
Yeah.
By saying thank you, it has that nice little upward inflection. And after you say thank you, if your dog barks or grumbles again, you give them a short little time out in the bathroom. So you take him by the collar, you remove him from that location.
Mm-hmm.
So that they're learning that thank you means please be quiet. If they get quiet for a second or two, you tell them good dog and you give them some treats. And if they bark again, they get a timeout. So you're giving them a really clean black and white of if you bark, bye-bye. If you don't bark, you get food. Mm-hmm. It's your choice.
Yeah, that makes sense. I have been known to say thank you to my dog, so...
Obviously, I was doing something right. Let's go now to Sue in Whitewater, and she also has a question about winter. Hi, Sue.
Hi. I walk my rescue dog, Lulu, twice a day. We have a nice path that we walk. About a quarter of it is in shade, and the rest of it is in sunshine. And I notice that in the winter when I'm walking with her, how bright the snow is. And I'm wondering what kind of effect would it have or does it have on dogs? And are goggles any kind of solution, or is the reflection of the snow harmful to the dog's eyes?
That's a great question. You know, if I had to think back to different dog breeds, we see a lot of our sight hounds, the Rhodesian Ridgebacks, they almost have like this really pretty eyeliner around their eyes. And if I had to take an educated guess, that would be like football players with the black tar under the, or whatever, the black makeup they put under their eyes to absorb the light to give them better vision. So I would wonder how her behavior is in this bright area of snow. Does it seem to change? Do you feel like she struggles like changing directions or does she become disoriented? But if the answer is no, then I wouldn't worry too much about it. But the one thing I would say is that they do make doggles. They're called doggles. And they can protect your dog's eyes. I've seen people that ride with their dogs on motorcycles, dogs that like to have their heads out windows. They put the doggles on to protect from any flying debris that could be on the road. And it couldn't hurt to teach her to wear a pair of doggles with some light tint to protect her eyes. But the big takeaway here would be if her behavior changes in those sunny spots, to see if that's actually affecting her. But if she behaves normally, I probably wouldn't worry too much about it.
Yeah, I think animals in general are they can adapt to well that equipped. Kind of a thing, right? Well equipped, unlike us. So
right.
Yeah, so have fun with that, Sue. Next up, we have Bonnie, and Bonnie's in Wanakee. What can we help you with today?
Hi, this is about my sister-in-law's dog, but she's not available, so I hope I can answer your questions. This has been so challenging for her and her husband. Her dog is some sort of a doodle mix, two-year-old. I don't know if size matters, but small, medium dog. And she cannot take the dog anywhere in the car for any length of time without the dog vomiting or having a bathroom accident or both. And she's done a lot of research and tried many of the things, and I tried to think what might make sense. So she tried making the car a fun place, put the, you know, for a few minutes, give the dog treats, just the sort of typical things you think of. So I guess if nothing else, and I'm wondering if I should refer her to you, if you have had any luck with really difficult cases like this. I believe she even tried a sedative, but I think there was an issue with that. Maybe it didn't even stop the dog from, you know, pooping and vomiting. Their life schedule is designed kind of around who can be there for the dog.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thanks, Bonnie.
That's tough, especially when the dog is showing that many symptoms. If she has done the heavy lifting of desensitization in the car and around the car and traveling, the only other little tips I would offer is making sure that there's no meal times, probably like an hour before traveling, because that food will still be in her belly. And the other part of this too is, you know, the other thing I would suggest is just sitting in the car. But sometimes just the thought of being in the car can cause all of the physical symptoms to occur because of the natural series of events that occurs. So the other thing I would do is have her consult with her veterinarian, because there are anti-nausea medicines that you can give a dog, because if she genuinely has car sickness, a medicine similar to Dramamine that we would take might be the key to really solve the issue, because we have to see if she's actually car sick or if it's psychosomatic and mm-hmm. it's just you know, something bad happened in the car and that's what's causing her anxiety. Maybe mm-hmm. somebody had to tap the brakes and she went flying a little bit. That could be traumatic for a dog.
Sure.
So sorry you're dealing with that. Thank you for
frustrating.
Calling.
Frustrating. Yeah, thank you, Bonnie. And good luck to your sister. We had an email from Mattson about the question. When his dog, Pete, gets overexcited, he can't stop jumping in the air or up on people. And he's tried feeding him low, but it hasn't curbed his jumping. Any further suggestions? And thanks for being the best trainer.
My pleasure. So with jumping up, a lot of dogs that get excited, they have a tendency to not be able to think when they're aroused. So one of the things that I teach in family dog training is arousal techniques. So what I'll do is I'll work on really nice focus games, right, where the dog has to sit still or leave food on the floor, something that requires a good amount of focus. From there, I'll play tug. So I'll release the dog from that job, and then I'll play tug and really lather the dog up, play with him rough, play some tug, get him excited, and then I go back to a game. So what that does, and even though those games don't really revolve around jumping up, it helps them learn how to think when they're excited. So when you meet a person, and I divide people into two groups, family and strangers. So when they meet a family member, you can instruct them on what to do when their dog, when they come over. And a lot of times people go, oh, it's okay, I don't mind. And then the dog is like, I knew my hard work and perseverance. If I kept jumping just one more time, I'm going to get pet. So by really limiting how much interaction they get when they're jumping, it can really be helpful overall. But getting them aroused, because when people meet, and that's one of the things I would do, I would stand over the dog and I would start really calm and chill. Pet the dog a little bit, stop petting. If they don't jump, I pet them some more and be calm and chill. Little by little, I would start ramping up my voice and my mannerisms to emulate what it looks like when a stranger pets the dog. I'm guessing your dog is adorable. So people go, squeal, I'm going to pet your puppy. What a good boy. And then the dog starts to launch. So by training them how to think when they're excited, it can be really helpful in those moments when they are excited and they put on their best self to control their impulses to jump. But what you said about feeding low and squatting to pet can limit how much jumping they do.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, good luck to you, Mattson. And let's go back to the phones. We've got Brian in Belleville. Hi, Brian.
Hi there. I love your show and I appreciate all your advice.
Thank you.
Thank you. I have about a 4 or 5 year old rehome and she's part shepherd and part boxer. She's about 90 pounds, so she's rather wide. But my concern is she's like my natural barometer where she'll know if it's going to rain later that day and that bothers her, and the wind bothers her. So she won't even come up on the bench. She'll just sit or go sit in the corner where she feels safe. And I'm just wondering what I can do about getting her desensitized. I've been taking her out in the wind, and as long as I go out with her, she'll go to the bathroom. But I don't know what to do when she's inside.
Yeah, and you know, they do have this amazing ability to detect weather. They say that some dogs can detect earthquakes minutes before they happen. So listening to her, and again, like I said throughout the show, be a student of your dog's behavior. So in those moments where you might start seeing her pace or go to a specific location where she likes to hunker down, taking those signals from her and using that as a moment to take her out to go potty before the storm comes or if it gets too blustery and windy. So when you take her outside, the other part is we sort of look at our nervous or anxious dogs with sad eyes. Instead, throw a party, right? When it's blustery out or the weather starts to come, you know, pull out some treats and just, you know, have her follow you around the house and give her some treats for just going through her basic obedience and manners. Associating the bad weather that's to come with yummy treats can really change the mindset of a dog and say, oh, wow, I hope we have some inclement weather. Dad gets very generous when there's a storm brewing. So by playing with her and getting her excited, it can be really helpful to sort of alleviate the issue And a lot of times, you know, it tugs on our heartstrings and we want to sort of help our dog feel better, but we can help them feel better by us changing our mood and helping them feel a little bit more excited and happy versus scared and nervous.
Okay. Well, thanks for that call, Brian. Appreciate it. We've got an email and, we've got about a minute and a half to go through. It really quick. But basically, the question is from Heike in Madison? Apparently, she had her dog with you for a little bit. But the female, it's a female, marks inside when they take her to a friend's house and if another dog lives there. So how does she encourage her not to do that?
And I think that's Steve Gotcher's wife.
Oh, is it?
I think so.
Okay. Well, Steve is a WPR employee, so.
Yes. So one thing I would do is you know, making sure, so when a dog marks, it's them sort of just like being, you know, sort of not sure of their surroundings and where they are. If there's another dog there, it might just be them establishing themselves within the household. So a couple things you can do. One is making sure she's eliminated outside as much as possible. And then when you come back inside, have her on leash for a little bit. If it is the Heike I'm thinking of, working the chill out game that we've taught her, and getting her to a place where she's focused and chill with you, and then giving her the opportunity to be off leash and wandering little by little, so that you're not just giving her the whole run of the house all at once.
Okay. That makes sense. Well, good luck with that. Right now, you're listening to The Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau, and we'll be back with more canine behavior help right after this break for the news. And we're talking about taking care of your dog today. Happy you're with us here on the Ideas Network. I'm Jill Nadeau, and for Larry, our guest is George Malara. He's a professional dog trainer and owner of Divine Canine in Madison. George has trained dogs for over 20 years, which is surprising, George, because you look like you're maybe 20 right now. So, you know, he's been a pet behavior counselor also. What are your questions about your dog's behavior? Are you trying to train a new dog? What challenges are you running into? Give us a call at 800-642-1234, or you can send an email to ideas@wpr.org. And we've had a couple of people waiting online, so thank you so much for that. Let's go to David first. He's in Milwaukee. Hi, David.
Hi. I've got a 3-year-old Shepherd Husky mix, and I got her from the Humane Society. She's pretty sensitive, and I like sleeping with her, and she's done that for a couple of years. But the minute I got one of these beds that go up and down, she kind of freaked out and won't sleep with me in the bed. She runs over to the couch. In fact, when I'm brushing my teeth, she knows I'm going in to the bedroom, and she'll move over to the couch.
Aww.
And even any bed, I lie down with her, she moves off the bed because she's afraid it's going to move.
Sure.
That's a new one, but again, dealing with it how I would deal with any new thing. So I would do a lot of reward training around the bed. Now, one thing I would recommend is to situate the bed how you want it to be before getting her up in the bed. By doing that, this way the bed's not going to move in any other directions once she's up in the bed, because the motor hums and whirs as you're moving it. So the first thing I would do is get her up on the bed and make the bed a really happy place. So giving her stuffed Kongs, giving her Chewies on the bed, doing a lot of, like, you know, put her on the bed and play tug with her on the bed. Anything that's going to be engaging and fun on the bed. All the fun happens on the bed. Then, come bedtime, get your, like I said, before she's even in the room. And Jill and I were just talking about this when we were off air when the news was going. We were just talking about how dogs create these behavior chains. And this happens a lot with a lot of anxieties, right? Dogs know when you're putting on your dog run shoes versus your dress shoes. Dogs know when you're grabbing your briefcase or putting on a special jacket or shirt. They start to pay attention to their environment and they act accordingly. So if the dog has anxiety and they know you're getting dressed up for work, they start to, you know, go sit in the corner and get all sad, or get super excited and jump and get crazy when you just simply pull the leash off the hook. So for her, what we want to do is we want to start to teach her that brushing your teeth and all these. So I would alleviate some of the anxiety, mix up your bedtime routine. So put your jammies on, go sit and watch TV for a little bit, go lay in bed for a little while, then go back and watch TV, then brush your teeth, have a snack, then brush your teeth again. really mix up your routine so that she's not building up her anxiety based on what you do that triggers her to know that it's bedtime and causing her to feel uncomfortable around that bed. And then separate from that is doing all that happy training on the bed so that she starts to go, oh, it's not so bad.
Okay. Well, good luck, David. I'd really like to know how that turns out.
Me too.
But it makes sense, right? The dog's probably on the bed and all of a sudden it moves.
Right.
Oh, yeah. That would scare me too. We got an email from Amy in Milwaukee. She asks, how many treats are too many treats? The reason she is asking is because a lot of remedies for correcting behavior training treats. Do you feed them less food then? That's a very good question.
That's a great question. Yeah. Oftentimes humans are... they like to skimp on the treats, and they're just very careful with how many. And I always say, the darn dog's got to eat.
True. Right?
And the idea of feeding, it really does go with that. So, like, I'll talk about my dog, Dolly. So Dolly gets treats all day, right? When I'm training with her, teaching her new things, good behavior at the dog park, good behavior at home. So all these moments, she's getting treats. And now in my head, I say to myself, all right, Dolly, you ate like a pot-belly pig today. I'm going to give you a third of your meal, a half of your meal. So I can adjust how much kibble she gets at her actual mealtimes based on how many other treats that she's gotten. Now, we hear the word treat, and I think cupcakes and cake and decadent yumminess, right?
Yes.
Treats only have to happen when they're getting a reward, right? That's the idea of a treat. Nowhere does it say that a treat can't be healthy.
Right.
So if you're using a high-quality kibble that's not her normal kibble, you can use that as a reward. It's novel. And it's a good quality dog food. You don't have to worry about your dog taking in a lot of bad calories using, you know, more chemically processed treats that aren't necessarily healthy for your dogs. And being generous with the treats. So you can still be generous and manage your dog's caloric intake. Now, the other side to this is young dogs versus older dogs. I'm going to be 46 and I have to be careful with what I eat because it seems like everything goes right to my belly. Whereas I'm envious of my 15-year-old son and my 7-year-old daughter because they're like billy goats, right? They can eat anything and as much as they want and not gain a single pound. So paying attention to your dog's age is also important because that's how their calories are going to affect their weight and where they keep it. The other thing I want to mention is house training. So what goes in must come out. So making sure that you're giving your dog ample time to go to the bathroom if you have a young dog that you're still house training so that the calories are not going to be that, you know, so you know what's happening in your dog's life and when they have to use the facilities.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And they do have treats that are yummy to dogs, but not necessarily full of calories or fat or anything, right?
What fun are those, Jill, though, really?
They're the good treats, George.
Yes.
Let's go to Chris in Oconomowoc. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Jill. Hi, George. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
I'm actually calling on behalf of my mother and my stepfather's dog. They have a 12-year-old English Springer Spaniel. And let's just say this dog is pampered. This is like my mom's best friend.
Oh.
And this dog does not leave her side. My mom doesn't go out. She's at her house a lot. But I guess in the last month or so, her dog Willow has gotten a little aggressive towards her, just towards her, not towards my stepfather. And she doesn't know why. And I had mentioned maybe she has arthritis and maybe she touched her wrong. And maybe now she relates that whenever she sees my mom come to give her a hug or something. And she just doesn't know what to do about it.
I love that you're sort of troubleshooting that in that respect. And that's probably where I would go. Anytime there's a behavior that has a very fast onset and the behavior wasn't there, I always rule out anything medical first. So many medical problems can masquerade as behavior problems, and you can do as much training as you want. It's not going to fix the medical issue. Had a case a while back with a Cocker Spaniel that started biting out of the blue. And normally I go, no, the dog was giving signals. But after I took my history, I went and met with the dog. I muzzled the dog because he was trying to bite me, and I flipped his ear, and he had a horrible ear infection.
Oh.
And I said, has he been dragging his ear on the ground? Has he been rubbing his ear on the walls because it's itchy? They're like, yeah, he has. I go, yeah, he has an ear infection. He needs antibiotics. He doesn't need me. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, after the antibiotics, problem went away. So if your dog is of a certain age, and arthritis can affect young dogs as well. It's a common misconception that it only affects elderly dogs. Or it could be just another injury. Another client I had, their younger dog started attacking dogs at the dog park. And out of the blue, mm-hmm. where normally she wrestled and played. I said, get that dog to the vet. Two slip discs in her back.
Oh.
So she was in pain.
Sure.
And once we alleviated, took care of that problem, she was back to normal. So I would look into relieving anything medical. Also, being a student of your dog's behavior and watching when she becomes aggressive towards your mother. So if it is... because it's a fast onset, if your mom has been hugging her whole life, this shouldn't be a new behavior. And most dogs, some dogs do like to be hugged and some don't. So figuring out ways that your mom can interact with her pup in ways that aren't going to make your mom's dog nervous or scared, and helping her feel a little more comfortable. But I would definitely take a trip to the vet and make sure that the vet can manipulate all her joints and stuff to see if there's anything medical going on.
Makes sense. Good luck, Chris. We'll go to Diane in St. Charles, Illinois. Hi, Diane.
Hi. Thanks for taking me. Jill and George, I appreciate the show. My son has a French bulldog that reacts severely, aggressively. Anytime you take the vacuum out, a hair dryer, and even changing out the garbage bags, you just pull the bag out of the drawer and she just goes berserk, and she's biting and barking. And we tried to desensitize her and keep her away from, that particular thing that we're doing. But she still, even though she might be on a different in a different room, she still is reacting in an aggressive way. I mean, she attacks the vacuum. It's kind of scary. I mean, she's biting it.
Right.
Sure.
I'm just wondering if you, and I'm not sure if it's because her ears, maybe she's sensitive to the sound,
and
if it's just.
That's generally what I think it is for dogs. It's that really high pitch whirring sound from the vacuum, hair dryer, and even the plastic bags where they make that crinkling sound. It could be something that she's hearing that makes her super uncomfortable and wants to become aggressive towards it. So with training, 80% of training is planning. And so breaking down the whole procedure, the vacuum is in a specific closet. She probably, like I said to one of the previous callers, breaking down what happens each step of the way. So if the vacuum is kept in one specific closet, I would probably move the location of the vacuum so that it's a little less predictable. The second thing I would do is, again, breaking this down into its smallest components and maybe just pull the vacuum out of the closet and leave it there, and having her on leash and giving her treats. Then put the vacuum away, no more treats. Really building up that slow process of desensitization and taking your time. Now, you're going to have to vacuum, right?
Oh, come on.
You don't get a get-out-of-jail-free card. You have to do the vacuuming. So one thing I would say is, like, plan your vacuuming around exercise. So if she does go to dog parks or a nice long walk, try to get some vacuuming done when she's out of the house so that we don't trigger her in a huge way when the vacuum comes out and you're actually having to vacuum. And another part of the desensitization process can also be just turning on the vacuum for a quick second. So when you flip the switch, it builds up, and then you shut it off, and it goes down. And you're feeding her treats while the sound is happening so that she starts to get used to it. Now, when you're using treats around this, we want to use the big money that folds, right? So chicken, cheese, turkey, hot dogs, roast beef. We want to really send the message home that vacuum is the best thing in the world. And we do that with food. And take it very, very slow. Anytime there's a big trigger from a specific stimulus, whatever that might be, You want to work extremely, extremely slowly. Anybody that knows me knows when it comes to basic obedience and manners, I'm super pushy. I want to get done. But when it comes to emotions of the heart from the dog, take it super, super slow.
Okay. Thank you for that call, Diane. Appreciate that. Next, we'll go to Dell in Fond du Lac County. Hi, Dell.
Hello. My dog, anytime somebody comes to the door, she wants to go through the door. It's a good thing I have steel doors or I'd have holes in them.
Wow. Oh, dear.
Any suggestions on how to stop this behavior or to change it so that he doesn't get so excited?
Well, let me ask you a question. You say excited, but is she aggressive or is she happy to see the people coming over?
He's just happy to see the people coming over.
Okay, that's
wonderful.
And then he
licks their hands.
Okay. So in these moments where a dog is excitable, that's actually better news, right? We know that we don't have to have any sort of safety protocol in place where somebody could get hurt in terms of being bitten. Depending on the size of the dog, she could easily knock someone over if she was a larger breed. So the first thing is, desensitization process. So if somebody's coming over to your home, instead of having them go through the normal protocol of ringing the doorbell, maybe you ask them to shoot you a text or call you before when they're there. The second thing I would do is having her on leash so that she doesn't have the ability to get to the door and jump all over the door and try to get through the door. Something else to do is as people come in, you can leave a little baggie of yummy treats outside that the people can bring inside and switch her brain from super greeting to sitting and getting rewarded for sitting as opposed to jumping. And she'll also be on leash. So if she does start to jump, you can easily gently remove her from being able to finish her big exuberant greeting. The other big part of this is going back to that excitability. I'm not sure if you were listening earlier where I talked about arousal training and going through some of her basic obedience where she needs to have some nice focus and then playing tug with her, getting her excited, and then asking her to focus again is going to be really helpful in teaching her how to remain calm even though she's excited mentally. And one last thing is reminding your guest to come in with calm energy and not squealing and getting excited to say hi to your pup, because it seems like she has a nice big beautiful circle of friends that really love her. We want to make sure that people are being helpful to you so that you're not dealing with this exuberant greeting.
That's difficult to do, isn't it? To train your guests to come. You got to train your dog, you got to train yourself and your guest. We got an email from Katie. Her daughter has a 3-year-old rescue dog, and they put her in a 3-week boot camp. And when she came home, she had a basic idea of commands, but certainly not a mastery. And they also did very little work with the family. So Katie is thinking that for the amount of money that they spent, that the dog should have a much better handle on basic commands. Is she expecting too much, or did she get shortchanged?
You know, these boot camps and stuff, a lot of times people ask me to do like a board and train. And as nice as the price tag is attached, I know how to train a dog.
Yeah.
I want you to know how to train a dog. So, and there also has a lot to do with repetition. So whether they gave you handouts or videos or didn't spend enough time with you, the idea, if you think about training in general, if she went to like somewhere that's a food-based training, a reward-based training dog trainer, the systems are already in place and she probably knows the behaviors, but you're lacking the mechanics to be able to execute those behaviors. So it's important, if you can, get some handouts, get some videos if you can. And I mean, I'd be happy to polish up because I'm guessing that she learned these behaviors, but you need to learn the mechanics and practice them and repeat them. It has less to do with her. The information is probably in her head and knows how to do the behaviors, but she has to generalize them to you, and you have to know how to do the behaviors.
It takes time.
Yeah.
Again, be patient.
Right.
Let's go back to the phones. We've got Bibi in Farmington with a question. I'm not sure if this is in your area, George, or a vet, but we'll see. Go ahead, Bibi.
Hi. Yeah, I'm calling about my 5-month-old Morkie. I need to know how much sleep does a dog normally need? And before you answer the question, I wanted to also say that when someone is having an event for the first time that they plan to have repeatedly, it's called the inaugural event. And I'll take, I hope to hear my answer.
Okay.
Wonderful.
Thank you. I knew that the first annual was not correct.
Inaugural. So. Groundbreaking. All
right. Thank you, Bibi.
So, Bibi, you're a little morky. How much sleep does a dog need? A lot.
Mm-hmm.
Dogs need a huge amount of sleep, especially young dogs and older dogs. Dogs can sleep upwards of 7 to 10 hours a day, and they need that sleep. So they're up for short stints, and they're like new cell phones, right? They charge up so nicely, and then as your phone gets older, it doesn't charge as fast.
That's a great analogy.
So we want to make sure we're giving our dogs ample sleep. So yes, up 7 to 10 hours. Now, there's a couple of other components that go with sleep. So with everybody during the pandemic being home, right? I'm home with my dog and I'm on my computer doing emails and Dolly's sleeping beautifully on her bed. And I get up to go to the kitchen to go get a drink or a snack. And Dolly goes, "Are you going to the kitchen? You crazy son of a gun? I'm in." Right? And she's coming with me to the fridge. So the sleep can get disrupted throughout the day and they're not getting that deep REM sleep that they really, really need. So crate training is beautiful for this because you can put your dog in a different room in the crate with like something nice to chew on. They sort of self-soothe and they get into their nice deep sleep away from the rest of the house. In our household, we just train the dogs to sleep through everything. So with kids in the house and everything, Dolly can sleep through anything. But yes, dogs do need a very, very good amount of sleep to fulfill their needs. And it can affect their behavior too. I know I'm a big grump when I don't get my sleep.
Oh yeah. Yeah, me too. Thank you so much, Bibi. And hopefully you'll get that doggy a lot of sleep. And let's go to email. Mary emailed us. She has adopted a 9-year-old German Shepherd, just a very sweet girl and loves living in the woods. And she gets plenty of activity and outdoor stimulation with their other dog, a yellow lab. But the Shepherd seems a lot smarter than the lab. And Mary doesn't think she's getting the mental stimulation she needs. So could you give some specific examples of games to play with her indoors to stimulate her mind?
Absolutely. We covered a couple of these already. You know, shepherds love to rip stuff up. I mean, dogs do. Paper in any form,
yes.
Right? From a tree branch all the way to 8.5 by 11
yes.
And toilet paper and cardboard.
Oh, yeah.
And everything.
Toilet paper, paper towels.
So taking an old T-shirt and sprinkling some treats on it, rolling it up and sticking it into the cereal box and allowing her to sort of have at that. Now, I do worry a little bit about a multiple dog household because they can become a little protective of their coveted items. So we want to make sure that they're nice and separate unless you're around and you can monitor them. But you can give both dogs the box with the T-shirt. Scatter feeding outside, or you said indoors.
Inside, yeah.
Scatter feeding in different rooms, like I said, just scattering some kibble where they have to go back and forth. And you can put little piles behind the planter, under your desks where they have to go use their nose to go find all those little tasty morsels. And then also just like the classic Kong. The Kong toy is so lovely for that reason. You know, it's a timeless classic. You just stuff food in the Kong. Now, the Kong, you can think about like the New York Times crossword puzzle.
Yes.
Mondays is easy and Saturdays is hard and Sundays is easy for me. So what we want to do is when you first stuff a Kong for a dog, a lot of people want to jam it packed and freeze it. And the dog might say, "Oh, I really want what's in there, but I can't get it out."
Yeah.
So start stuffing it very easily so they barely have to touch it for food to fall out. So it's reinforcing.
Mm-hmm.
And then start making it harder and harder and harder until you get to the Saturday Times crossword puzzle.
All right. Sounds good. Well, thank you so much, George. We really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me again.
We always learn so much when you're with us.
Love being here.
We've been talking with George Malara. He is a professional dog trainer and owner of Divine Canine in Madison. Join us again tomorrow when we'll talk about the new Midwest Crane Fest. Looking forward to that. I'm Jill Nadeau in for Larry Mueller. Thanks for listening to the Ideas Network. Stay well.